Welcome to NPR's Movie Podcast. This week, film critic Ernest Hardy offers a take on favorite African-American holiday titles. But first, a holiday season blockbuster preview.
Between now and the end of the year, Hollywood will be opening more than 50 films, many hoping for Oscar consideration. We'll get everything from animated French mice to Nazis to visitors from other galaxies. We asked Bob Mondello to give us his annual selective preview.
'Tis the season for all manner of entertainment, but for some reason, Yuletide blockbusters have lately tended to be apocalyptic. Last Christmas, it was I Am Legend about a worldwide plague. This year, in The Day the Earth Stood Still, disaster is not viral, it's extraterrestrial, though it arrives in a nicely pressed suit.
Yes.
Do you feel pain?
My body does.
Are you human?
My body is.
Are you aware of an impending attack on the planet Earth?
You should let me go.
Otherworldly, Keanu Reeves, sounds plausible. The Day the Earth Stood Still is a remake of a Cold War thriller from the 1950s, which means it will fit right in with all the horrors at the multiplex from a decade earlier, Nazi horrors. Stories about Hitler's Germany are often regarded as Oscar bait, and this year they're everywhere you look. The film Good, for instance, brings us a liberal writer who's appalled when his novel becomes a Third Reich propaganda tool. The Reader has Ralph Fiennes discovering that a woman he'd had an affair with was once a guard at Auschwitz. In Defiance, three brothers go underground to battle the Germans, and in Valkyrie, Tom Cruise plays a Nazi officer leading a conspiracy to assassinate the Führer.
We need to reorganize.
There has to be a chance of success.
That's why you're here.
Hitler's Germany has seen its last sunrise.
Can I count you in?
Death and destruction not your thing at Christmas time? Well, how about some social mayhem? It comes in various comic styles. Domestic mayhem in the Home for Christmas comedy, Nothing Like the Holidays.
Why is everybody fighting?
And they're not fighting, we're conversating.
There's something I like to say. I'm leaving your father.
There's also dog-loving mayhem in Marley and Me, kid-oriented mayhem in Adam Sandler's Bedtime Stories, animated rodent mayhem in The Tale of Despero, and Jim Carrey-style mayhem in Yes Man, a comedy about a guy who has always said no, but who changes his tune.
I do want to take guitar lessons. I do want to learn how to fly. Yes, I would like to learn Korean.
What?
So wait, you can say yes to everything.
Exactly.
I wasn't open to stuff, and now I am. Things are changing for me.
Yo, Carl, hitting the clubs, got a case of Red Bull, gonna pull an all-nighter. You down?
Changing your life is something of a theme for the holidays, though mostly in more serious stories. There's Wendy and Lucy, about a woman who heads to Alaska to get a new start. The French award winner Secret of the Grain tells of a dock worker who quits his job after 35 years to open a restaurant. And in Revolutionary Road, Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet struggle with a comfortable suburban existence that isn't nearly as comfortable as they'd expected.
I support you, don't I? I work 10 hours a day at a job I can't stand.
You don't have to.
But I have the backbone not to run away from my responsibilities.
Who made these rules anyway?
This being the 1950s, the rules are set in stone.
Just because you got me safely in this little trap, you think you can bully me into feeling whatever you want me to feel?
In a trap!
Yes!
In a trap!
Revolutionary Road is the first film DiCaprio and Winslet have made together since Titanic. Gran Torino, on the other hand, is the first film Clint Eastwood has made since, what, The Changeling, 3 weeks ago? The difference is he's not just directing Gran Torino, but also starring in it as a guy who's getting on in years, but who sounds less like an old Eastwood than like the Eastwood of old.
Ever notice how you come across somebody once in a while you shouldn't have messed with? That's me.
Are you crazy, man? Get out of here, man.
Eastwood will turn out to have a softer side in Gran Torino, as will a pretty fearsome-looking Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler. Rourke plays an over-the-hill tough guy with health and family issues, Randy the Ram Robinson.
This life, you lose everything you love, everything that loves you. A lot of people told me that I'd never wrestle again. The only one who's going to tell me when I'm through doing my thing is you people here.
Rourke is giving an outsized, very physical performance in what is essentially an intimate, independent film. A couple of historical figures are central to grand performances in grander films. Benicio del Toro plays Cuban revolutionary Che Guevara in Steven Soderbergh's two-part, six-hour drama, Che. And Frank Langella recreates on screen his award-winning stage performance as Richard Nixon in Frost Nixon, the story of the former president's dramatic post-Watergate TV interviews with talk show host David Frost.
3, 2, cue David.
Are you really saying the president can do something illegal?
I'm saying that when the president does it, that means it's not illegal.
I'm sorry.
That's Michael Sheen as David Frost, also recreating a role he originated on Broadway. The producers of another stage-to-film adaptation, the Pulitzer Prize winner Doubt, opted for new stars. On screen, Meryl Streep glowers as a 1960s nun who becomes suspicious about priest Philip Seymour Hoffman when he takes an interest in the school's only black student.
What happened in the rectory?
Happened? Nothing happened. I had a talk with a boy.
What about?
Private matter.
He's 12 years old. What could be private?
Serious stuff this Christmas season. So serious that there's even a really wrenching animated film, Waltz with Bashir, that deals with an Israeli soldier's repressed memories of a wartime massacre. Happily, there will also be stories for escapists, including a century-spanning romance that opens on Christmas Day. It's taken from a short story by F. Scott Fitzgerald about a man who ages in reverse.
My name is Benjamin. Benjamin Button.
How old are you?
7. But I look a lot older.
God bless you. He's 7.
Alas, as Benjamin's getting younger, the love of his life is getting older.
We are almost the same age. We're meeting in the middle.
I was thinking how nothing lasts. What a shame that is.
Brad Pitt and Cate Blanchett star in The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, a film that has inspired high hopes in Hollywood with its mix of digital effects and offbeat story scripted by Eric Roth, who scripted Forrest Gump. It still sounds downbeat, though, so let me leave you with a picker-upper from the soundtrack of a film noir with music. Set in the 1930s and dedicated to the New Orleans musicians who were affected by Hurricane Katrina, it's called Dark Streets, and however it ends up looking on screen, it will certainly brighten the holiday's sound. I'm Bob Mandela.
If you feel lonely,
on Thanksgiving Day, after the football game and the big dinner and the heated debates, it could be time to sit down and watch a movie. If you can't decide what film to watch, never fear. Film critic Ernest Hardy joins us now to tell us about some Thanksgiving classics. Hi, Ernest.
Hello, how are you?
Doing great. So what makes a good Thanksgiving family flick?
I think it's those films which sort of deal with family issues, family strife, but then end on a note of hope or uplift.
So we're going to go through a few of them. And rather than, you know, go deeper into the issue, I'm going to go ahead and start with one of the classics, 1974, Claudine, Diane Carroll. She's working under the table as a maid so she can qualify for welfare. And James Earl Jones plays a garbage man who falls in love with her. But can he deal with her cynical kids?
Hi, Sugar. Miss Claudine Price Leaf here?
Yeah, who are you?
My name is Rupert B. Marshall. What's yours?
Patrice.
Patrice? Oh, yeah, like Patrice Lumumba.
No, like Patrice Price.
Yeah, right. That's a pretty name. Your mama home?
No.
Where is she?
I don't know.
You mind if I come anyway for her?
Mama said never let nobody in when she ain't home.
Well, there you go. It's the grand old rule of being a child with the key. All done, sped up. And if the kids can't keep Claudine and her love interest apart, poverty and their own past might.
Holy Christ. How'd you wind up with 6 kids?
Well, haven't you heard about us ignorant black bitches always got to be laying up with some dude just grinding out them babies for the taxpayers to take care of? I get $30 a piece for them kids. Oh, I'm living like a queen on welfare, you know.
You're jumpy.
Well, my kids are fine. You don't need to be worried about my kids.
Oh, no, I'm not worried about your kids. Not my problem.
That's shit all the time from the welfare, always asking me to apologize for my kids. You know what? I don't have to explain that to nobody. Now you just pushed the wrong button.
Okay, I was just asking.
Well, not holding back.
No, not at all.
What does this movie say about how people were discussing things at the time? Is it an accurate? I mean, you know, film is always kind of either a hyped up or a stylized version of reality. But what relationship did it have to the reality of the times?
One of the reasons that I love that film is that when she falls in love with the garbage man, it not only complicates her own emotional and inner life, but it also reshapes the dynamic of her household with her children, and it also endangers her government assistance. So the film captures all of that, and it does it in a way, you know, the language, the cadence, the vocabulary of the early 70s in black film that was made then was very different than what we see now. One of the things that I love about Diane Carroll is that when she's playing this part, and it was a part that many people thought she could not play because of her own persona. You know,
her glamour.
Very glamorous and very regal and very aloof. Those qualities, when she brought them to this character, it made the character more resonant and more layered than and the expected single black mom living in a poor neighborhood. You know, because there are black women who live in poverty and who live lives of struggle that are dignified and that are classy and that are intelligent. And having Diane Carroll bring those qualities to this character, not only did it help her expand her image, but it also broadened what people thought of this kind of character.
Well, we're going to take a little bit of a leap through history. You know, you go from Claudine, 1974, and this is just a decade later, but it's culturally miles away. And every movie needs a tagline for your next pick. The tagline goes like this. The beat of the streets is the dance explosion of the 80s. Push it to pop it, rock it to lock it, break it to make it for the break of your life. What are we talking about?
Breaking.
So people who watch this film as children now are old enough to have children themselves. And what was once avant-garde is now kind of, you know, something that people look at as, you know, this playful, old school, out of date, but in a loving way.
Yeah.
You know, what role do you think it has to people now?
You know what? It's a very charming film. I mean, that's one of the reasons that I put it, you know, recommended it on the list. It's a very charming, fun film, and it reminds us that, you know, this was before gangster rap. It was before people felt that you had to have violent, blood-soaked tales from the hood in order to be authentically hip-hop. And so this is a reminder that hip-hop is much more varied and much more dynamic, and that there is a musicality and playfulness with language and with image.
All right, this one might be a little surprising for the holidays. It's all about fractured family, but, you know, redemptive. Derek Luke, Denzel Washington, also directed by Denzel. It is Antoine Fisher.
You looking for a discharge, Fisher?
I ain't looking for nothing.
That's where you headed.
If I went out of the Navy, I'll just leave.
Unauthorized absence.
Yeah, that's what the Navy calls it.
Mm-hmm. Running away how you handle your problems?
I don't have no problems.
Where'd you spend your childhood?
Cleveland.
Parents still live there?
I never had any parents.
They deceased?
I never had parents.
That would make you a medical miracle, Seaman Fisher. Where are you from?
I'm from under a rock.
Okay. All right, I'm gonna see you next week.
I ain't coming back.
Why not?
Because there's nothing wrong with me.
I agree with you there. See you next week.
There has become a whole genre of the kind of the male coming of age film, but with the psychological twist of the guy finding himself, you know, through counseling of some sort. Mm-hmm. What does this movie bring to the table?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I'm really glad that you framed it in that way, because when this film was first released, a lot of mainstream critics dismissed it as being simply cliched and simply formulaic. What this film brings to the setup that you just described is that none of the other films deal specifically with the fact that beneath so much of the rage, so much of the destruction that a subset of young black males bring to the table, beneath all of that is depression. Beneath all of that is tremendous sadness. You know, this film talks about the fact that young black boys are victims of sexual abuse and emotional abuse. That's not a common topic in any film. This is a film that says that beneath the swagger, there is a lot of dysfunction that is not the fault of the person who is doing the swaggering. And what it does even more importantly is it shows that there can still be redemption, that there can still be affirmation for the one who is victimized, for these people, for these young men who are brutalized, you know, by society, by their families, that if we don't just toss them out, if we embrace them, you know, they can be, and they still are, our family.
Now, as a final film, we have a tearjerker, Imitation of Life. Which version are you talking about?
We're talking about the great Douglas Sirk 1959 version. This is the one that has Lana Turner, Mahalia Jackson doing that amazing version of Trouble of the World, and the actress Susan Conner, who is actually not African-American, but she plays a very fair-skinned African-American character who's trying to pass for white.
Sarah Jane Johnson, you put your clothes on and get out of this place.
Say, honey, who is this character?
I don't know. Never seen her before in my life. Now quit lying. You tell me you had a respectable job in the library.
Hey, what's going on here?
Oh, she must be crazy. Tell her my name's Judy Brand. Make her go away.
Look, lady, why don't you blow?
You'd better keep out of this, mister. This girl here's my daughter. And if you don't tell her to go home with me, her mother, I'll have the law on you.
Your mother?
Now, that's some drama right there.
Absolutely.
Loyalty, skin color, culture.
Yeah, and one of the things that I always...
Dishonor.
When I talk about this film, I like to point out something that the great film historian Donald Bogle wrote when he wrote about this film, and he says that, you know, the character of Sarah Jane doesn't so much want to be white as she wants white opportunities. And I think that's a very crucial distinction to make so that she's not simply cast as a villain. She has the skin tone that, according to all of society's rules, should ensure that she's a princess. But because she's actually, quote-unquote, of, you know, African-American descent, all those doors are shut in her face. So I would like people to bring that to the table when they watch this film and not see her just as this horrible, ungrateful child turning her back on her dark-skinned mother.
I want to thank you, Ernest.
Thank you for having me.
Ernest Hardy is a film and music critic living in Los Angeles, and you can find his essays, reviews, and interviews in his books, Blood Beats, Volumes 1 and 2. He also writes the blog Blood Beats at ernesthardy.blogspot.com.
You can hear these stories and more on our website, npr.org/movies.